Okay, there it goes. So hello, everybody, and welcome to our NEPT Open Coaching and Support Call. And we are here to answer your questions, help you with cases, help support you in any way you need and need support. So I'm here for you. So the way that, first of all, I want to start with, I can't wait to see some of you that are hopefully as many of you as possible that are coming to the retreat. And I haven't looked recently at the list, but I know there's like at least 20 that said yes so far. So yay. And I'm really looking forward to it, because if you haven't been to one before, you're in for a treat. Those of you who have been there before know that there's this amazing camaraderie and connection, and the exercises, the activities we do, the hot seats, everything is pretty amazing. And we're going to this retreat center, which couple of you, I don't know what anybody on this call has been to before, but it's one we did our first two retreats at when we first started. And unfortunately, the first one was in, I don't know, February, and the other one was in March, and the weather was chilly. So we didn't get to really take advantage of the full amazingness of the grounds. It's acres and hundreds of acres of property. And they have this grotto area that they had. When I found it, I had envisioned, oh, we're going to go out there. We're going to do some outdoor stuff. We're going to spread out. It's going to be awesome. And we didn't get to do it because the weather turned cold last time. The chance of the weather turning cold in mid-May is slim to none. The only possibility that we might have is it might get super hot, like 100 degrees. Unlikely to be that either. It's probably going to be in the mid-80s and just beautiful. So I'm really looking forward to that and doing some of our stuff outside. I consider it's really sacred grounds. It's beautiful from a natural standpoint, but also it's where the ashram is. It's, you know, it's this Hindu, right? Temple, Hindu or Buddhist. I always get those two confused, but I think it's a Hindu temple, and it's this huge grounds, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And so we're going to just have a blast. So I look forward to meeting those of you I haven't met before and reconnecting with those I have, and just really having this amazing transformational experience. So if you haven't already registered, then go to the link that's on the Facebook page, or that was in the email on Sunday, or there should be another email going out in the next few days to say, hey, yeah, I'm coming. And then make your reservations, call Chris, get your reservations taken care of. Very reasonable accommodations, like as little as $110 a night for room and all your meals. And they do all organic meals, and the food is phenomenal, and it's all just, you know, laid out in buffet style, and it's just a really lovely place, and we're going to have a great time. So who has questions, comments, things you need help with, things you need support with? Isabel, go ahead.
So a couple questions, hopefully they're short. So I have a couple clients are going to go through surgery pretty soon. One is a breast reduction, and another one is a hip replacement. And I have looked at the surgery notes, what you did for Karen, like you posted, like, know what you recommend her to take. And also Lynn also has some post-surgery material resources. So my question is, with the antibiotic that I'm not recommending, is it just to replace? Do you use it as a safety net kind of?
The reason that I'll give you a little background on how I put it together for Karen. Karen was like, I'm in this hospital. I'm sick. You know, I don't want to deal with these people, but they want me to take this for this, that for that. And she had a list of five things that they wanted her to take for these particular reasons. So I said, okay, we're just going to come up with an herbal nutritional protocol for each. So that's why we came up with the antibiotic, because they wanted, that's their typical post-surgery kind of thing. They think you're going to get an infection. They tried to do IV antibiotics for me for just a broken arm. I'm like, no, thank you very much. You want to put vitamin C in my IV? I'm very happy, but I'm not taking antibiotics. So that's what the antibiotics were there for. Would I necessarily do it? Depends on the person's state of health, right? If a person is kind of a debilitated, gets sick a lot, has immune system issues, then it's not a bad idea to do the antibiotic type herbal protocols to protect them. Some of them overlap, like the vitamin C that overlaps with the anti-inflammatory. Okay. So that's basically the reason there. And she had to say, look, I don't need your stuff. I've already got this stuff. This is what I'm doing. And actually one of the nurses went, wow, that's really interesting. Tell me more. And she actually sat with her and talked about it. So
Okay. So I'll, yeah, one of the, my client, I didn't recommend her the antibiotics. I'm not sure that she's into just everything natural. So I recommended her the anti-inflammatory in the liver, support. And you have here BCQ and inflammen for both. Yes. Are you just one?
No, you can do either. This was, okay. So here's what happened with Karen. I went, okay, she's in the hospital. I'm going to see her in an hour. What do I have? So I'm trying to fill these protocols. What do I have on hand? It doesn't mean it's the only thing or that's necessarily, but BCQ and Inflamex were very similar.
I think BCQ has more
Boswellia.
Yeah. Yeah, more of that ingredient.
But those are the things I happen to have on hand. And so I just took everything I had and put them in a big box.
Okay.
Went there. Yeah.
And the pain relief, that's homeopathic. You see, what you arnica?
Arnica is, swelling, pain relief, that kind of thing. And then I think I also might have had down.
Liver, you had hypericum?
Hypericum. That was for liver? No.
White willow.
Oh, white willow is what I had for the pain, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
White willow is a good anti.
Do you, Michelle's asking, can I share? Do you want me to share what you had?
Yes, you have the screen in front of you. Share it, yeah.
Okay, it's on Facebook.
I found the Facebook back.
Yeah, I pulled it off from Facebook. I'll share it
for now. Go ahead and share your screen.
Yeah, I'll share. Right. Looks right.
Yeah, it's all hand. You could see I was sitting in her hotel room writing this out. Like, what was this for? You know.
Okay. So, and the liver protection. You have dandelion here. What about milk thistle? Is there a difference?
Milk thistle's fine. It just happened to be what I had. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's right. Okay. So.
Yep. Okay. And then I had CBD for the sleep and pain also.
And vitamin C, that's every...
I had her take it every 2 to 3 hours. I would only try to take it every hour if you can get them to do that. You just have to watch their bowels.
Okay, that's 1 gram, right? That's every...
Right. It's going to be the bowel tolerance. What else do they have there? Spasms, most... Oh, black haw is amazing for spasms. And again, it's what I had. There's other things that can be used for spasms, but the magnesium and the black haw is used a lot for menstrual cramps for women with really severe menstrual cramps. And
okay.
In about 90% of the cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Yeah. So just some questions on this. Okay. That's good. The second question is, I think you replied to my Facebook post too. I have one client with bile, and Jimmy, thank you so much for, helping out too. The bile duct, liver bile duct cancer. So we're doing diets, kind of the 7 pillars right now. And I just want to know, what do I need to be careful about? She's very sensitive. I think some of the supplements, such as Mineral Rush, it actually gives her an itch. That's one of her primary symptoms, is she's itchy if she eats something.
Itchy skin is a common complaint in liver gallbladder imbalance. So let's see. So is there contraindications diet-wise? Certainly fats, right? You got to be really careful with the fats, not overloading her with fat. You also have to be careful with carbs, quite frankly, because the liver puts out bicarbonate to neutralize the stomach acid. And that helps with being able to digest carbs, like starches mostly.
Okay.
You have to watch for. I think it's just going to be real individual. Like, what does she tolerate?
And she gets full. I'm trying to get more information, but she gets full very quickly. I think there is some gut imbalances, some gas and bloating, and dysbiosis going on. So I'm trying to introduce the herbs slowly. I'm using biocidin, so to see if she could tolerate that.
Yeah. And the thing is, if she gets full quickly, we got to dispense with the blood sugar, kind of, eat less frequently and have her eat more frequently, especially with cancer, and you don't want her to waste away.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the concerns is also that if she can't digest fat, then, she's losing weight too. And she's just on the green juice diet. That's not enough for her.
Is she real skinny to start?
No, she's not real skinny to start. Okay.
So then I wouldn't worry about that right away, because the body will oftentimes normalize. When you start to detox, you will burn away fat, but your body kind of tends to come to a plateau. I don't think she's going to get overly skinny. If somebody starts out already, they're 90 pounds, then I'm really careful about that. MCT doesn't require bile salts to be able to digest. So okay. You check it out and see how she deals with that. But always, anytime you give somebody MCT oil, you always want to start with little tiny bits, because it can cause an extra dumping. And your body will get used to it, but it just too much, it will cause extra.
Tiny bit meaning like 1 teaspoon?
Oh, no, I would start with like quarter teaspoon.
Oh, okay, quarter
teaspoon. Okay. Right? I once started somebody with a teaspoon it was in an elixir, and she had to pull over on the way home. Okay, I've learned my lesson. When I thought small, I thought a teaspoon is small.
Okay.
No, you got to be really careful.
Okay, so 1/4 teaspoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And most people can work up to a tablespoon, but... You know, it just depends. It just really depends.
Okay. And so I'm also trying to see, have her get some tests on iron, hemoglobin, A1C, and all that testing. How do you feel about, because since she is losing nutrients, she needs nutrient-dense food. She's vegan. What do you think about introducing animal protein?
I think it's a mistake with somebody suffering from cancer to be introducing something that potentially toxic and hard to digest.
Okay, so even if it's like organic and...
I would not with gallbladder liver stuff and cancer. No, I wouldn't. Not personally. I would say you're trying to get more nutrients in her, then I would be looking at liquid minerals.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at like protein powders to get the protein.
Yeah. Okay. So
I would have a heart. I mean, that she needs to be in a cleansing mode to, if you're trying to help her body and her immune system to deal with it, I don't think that's a good idea.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's just kind of make sure if she's
been vegan for a long time.
I'm sorry?
Have you been vegan for a long time?
No, not for a long time. Maybe 3 months, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long has she had this cancer? How far along is this cancer?
It's February. She was diagnosed in February. So she just discovered in February. And the thing is, she said when she was first diagnosed, she was feeling itchy. That was her symptom. But her energy level was good.
Yeah.
She was still going about and doing things. But she went into hospital. They put in a stem in the bile duct. And after she got out of the hospital, she's feeling a lot of lethargy. So very tired all the time, a lot of energy.
Yeah. What do they say? Do they say anything in terms of staging and how far along it is?
Well, stage 4, I think, because it's not operable.
Yeah, but stage 4 usually means it's spread. I mean, metastasized. That's
It doesn't say that. I think I read up on that because of the location of the tumor. They stage it. They categorize it a little bit differently. I remember reading something. I could be wrong, but I'll go back and look. But it's stage 4, but they didn't tell her that it spread to other parts of the body.
Okay.
Yeah.
Usually stage 4 means it's metastasized.
Yeah.
So the goals, what did they say? Say it's stage 4, there's nothing they can do, right?
Well, they want her to do chemo, of course.
They wanted to do chemo.
She rejected that. That's why she's
working. She rejected that, sure. You know, the places that get the best results and the people that get the best results are people who do really intense cleansing.
Yeah, yeah. I talked to her about that, and she says, well, she could... She's in the D.C. area. She said, I could probably do a week, but I can't. You know, I've suggested different facilities.
You know, like Hippocrates or someplace like that, where they have all the therapies and they have the wheatgrass and they do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just tell a little bit of a case of someone who was in, she's been working in our community for a while, and she has been vegan for a long time. It turns out she had gotten tested and she'd had some issues. I don't remember what caused it, but what prompted her, and she got tested and they said she had uterine cancer. And she she had phone consultations with Dr. Lode in Arizona, and then Dr. Clement from Hippocrates. Mm-hmm. And based on that, she decided to do, she's doing a lot of juicing. She's doing a vegan, raw vegan cleanse kind of a diet. And she's actually working with one of our coaches here to help her with the nutrients, like doing testing and helping her optimize the nutrients. She just went and got her scan done last week and they did a D&C. They scraped, they pulled, clean. She's clean.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen to this person, yeah. But I think that severe situations require severe kind of things. And even if she were just to have a phone consult and even a week at a place like that and then be able to stick with it, right? Yeah. Be able to get the therapies and be able to figure out what's recommended in her situation and then follow it through.
They do phone consults. You could actually just do a phone consult. Okay.
Consults. Yep. She did phone consults with each of them.
Okay.
Yep. And then she kind of, merged their advice together and came up with her own plan and then worked with one of her coaches to do that.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. With that. Is this somebody you've been working with before? Or did she reach out to you?
No, it's just started last month. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. She found you to help her with this. I'm curious how she finds you.
No, it's actually a referral.
A referral. So somebody referred to you. Great.
Yeah. Referral. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, keep reaching out to us. Lynn said Lode is great. She just put his number in there.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. I'll probably do because her condition kind of changes.
It's tough because it's tough. It's very uncomfortable having any kind of dysfunction in that area. And it's such a key area for everything in the body, the detox and the digestion. It's a really challenging area to deal with any kind of pathology, let alone a cancer. And especially if it's blocking the duct and they had to put a stent in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And she's kept her gallbladder. They didn't take it out.
No.
Okay. No. And it's just in the common bile duct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And I think it's too close to the liver, so they couldn't operate.
They couldn't operate on it. Okay. Yeah. So things that are going to start to have it dissolve itself. Right. And a lot of times cleansing does that.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Janine wants to know, is she hungry?
She's not. She's actually gets full quickly.
Yeah.
And she gets hungry. I mean, she has appetite, she said, but she gets full very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
Well, she probably had an ultrasound. That's either an ultrasound or some kind of scan, contrast scan. That's how they diagnosed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else have questions or comments? Let's see if I have any hands up. I don't see any hands up. Let me look in the chat. Who else has questions, comments, Casey, something? Janine, go ahead.
Okay, this has to do kind of with the insulin resistance going on with the fats and all that. I'm really curious about that.
Say it again?
About the fats, excess fats causing insulin resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious because they're talking a lot how excess fats, even good fats, too much avocado, too many nuts, seeds, you'll get an imbalance of excess fatty acids. And then I was looking at a diagram. It's showing, okay, your essential fatty acids going in or fats going in, and the thought is that insulin only brings in glucose and that fatty acids just can go in by themselves. Is this correct?
To go into the cells?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, but how does GLUT4 play a role in this?
Okay, so first of all, free fatty acids are not, if you're going to eat food, right, and it's going to get converted to free fatty acids in the blood, they're either going to be burned or stored, right? So I have not seen any articles that have any substance to them that support the idea that excess healthy fats create insulin resistance. Every time somebody sends me an article, it's hearsay. There's nothing. It's excess fatty acids, which means somebody's overeating.
Right.
Somebody's overeating. Yeah, overeating can create lots of problems, right? Poor fats, oxidized fats, hydrogenated fats, those fats are going to damage insulin receptors. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen anything that I can believe in. And I mean, I'm open-minded. I did it in the newsletter for like 6 weeks in a row. I kept saying, and I read this article and I didn't find anything there. So there's still probably more articles I can go through, but every single one of them, I came to the same thing. It's bad fats, excess food in general, because even excess anything, excess protein or excess carbs will get converted to fat. Triglycerides, right? Mm-hmm. Triglycerides, the biggest cause of elevated triglycerides is insulin resistance. So I haven't seen anything that shows me this. And the evidence I see from the way people respond to cutting their carbs and increasing good fats, not oils. I'm not talking oils. I'm talking whole foods fats. Mm-hmm. That I see such good benefit that until I see some concrete evidence that there's danger to eating avocados, I'm going to continue to recommend eating avocados.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. And there's a lot of folks out there with a very low carb, very low fat diet, and they're eating tons and tons of carbs and fruit and, you know, grains and stuff. Now that might work for some folks and that may not work for other folks, right? It don't work for me. It creates excess, it creates insulin resistance. And for me personally, cutting down on the carbs and increasing the fat has helped me to reverse the insulin resistance.
So it could go back to individuality.
It goes back to individuality. And, you know, we create ketones from fat, right? So we learn to burn fat if we get into that mode.
Yeah, I was reading something to where it's good, like emergency, to do the ketones, but actually any length of time, it's not healthy for the brain to just be constantly using ketones to burn, that it actually needs.
I haven't seen that, but I'd like to see that, right? I'd like to see what that article would be. And yeah, I'm not a big fan of people being in full-blown ketosis, like a therapeutic ketosis, like you put somebody in for MS or for seizures. That's what elevated ketone levels. I get that way when I was fasting, you know, ketone levels are 6 or 7. That's not necessarily good long-term. And mostly because the way people do a ketogenic diet is so imbalanced. They're not eating enough vegetables. Because they're afraid of vegetables. Oh, lettuce has carbohydrates. I can't eat it on this ketone diet. I just need to eat animal fat and lard and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, nuts are, for some folks, keeps them out of ketosis. So those kind of diets are definitely dangerous long-term. I'm not a fan of being in the therapeutic ketosis long-term, especially the way most people do it.
Right.
But the benefits I see from being in mild ketosis, which is what we get when we do like a sweet spot type program, or when we do intermittent fasting, I can get into ketosis, you know, 16 hours. And I can measure my ketones and I've got ketones. Okay. I adapt really quickly, not a lot, just small amounts, right? So I know I'm shifting because I know I feel fine when my blood sugar is 45. Why? Because I produce ketones easily. Somebody else may get their blood sugar down to 45 and feel like they're going to die because they're not producing ketones. So the brain doesn't have an alternate source of energy. So I'm open. I really want to explore these things, but every time somebody sends me a boatload of studies, I read them and they're long and I underline and then I go, this is just saying that eating too much is not good for you because it's free fatty acids. Where do you get free fatty acids? From eating too much, from excess calories. You know what I mean? So. Yeah.
Well, that's somebody was posting in Sweet Spot, Marcia.
Yeah.
Because she was eating too many nuts.
She was eating too many calories.
Yeah. And she's went, oh, it shows I have too many fats. Well, if it's showing you're having too many fats, you need to cut down on all the nuts you're eating because too many fatty acids can also, well, from what I'm hearing, cause insulin resistance.
Exactly.
Because I found it in another one of our modules, you know, where it says, yeah, an imbalanced fatty acids can create insulin resistance. So, you know, some people don't want to believe that that too many fats can cause insulin.
Oh, no. I mean, that's crazy. Like, people just keep eating fat up the wazoo. It doesn't matter. If you eat too many calories, more calories than you can burn, you're going to have an excess of fat. You're going to gain weight, and you can create insulin resistance and a whole host of other conditions, right? And so people will, it's a matter of, it's just a matter of being reasonable, right? Like, my recipes have fatty, like, sauces and all this. And people say to me, well, how much fat do you eat in a day? I'm like, not all that much. Why? Because I don't sit around eating handfuls of nuts and avocados. I turn them into sauces and eat them over huge plates of vegetables, right? There's just so much you can eat when you eat a big plate of vegetables with a tahini sauce on it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But it's not like the people that are doing pure ketogenic diet, like the way it's put out there, they're eating lard, and they'll eat, like, you know, a quarter cup of lard on top of a quarter cup of vegetables. Mm-hmm. That's not the right proportion, even if lard was reasonable food to eat. Right. You know what I mean?
And then adding a lot of oils and fish oil.
And oil. I'm not an oil fan. I mean, I use oils therapeutically. If someone needs more omega-3s and they're not getting enough omega-3s from the food, or they're not breaking it down and we're working on their nutrients to help them to do their conversions, yeah, I'll give them some oils, right? Somebody who's very thin and has some gallbladder issues, I'm going to give them therapeutically MCT oil. Mm-hmm. I'll use it therapeutically, but I don't believe that oil is a whole food, right? It's not. Right? Lard isn't a whole food. Oil isn't a whole food. White flour isn't a whole food. Sugar isn't a whole food. And oil is just as much as a processed fractured food as white sugar, white flour. It's without the rest of the nutrients. But a whole avocado, whole coconut, right? A lot of people are coconut oil, just pour it all over everything. That's not a good thing either, right? So coconut, real coconut, whole coconut with all the protein and the carb and the fiber that it would have, the nutrient complex that it came with. Same thing with oils. I mean, vegetable oils, they get rancid almost immediately upon pressing them. They're just so volatile. And once you have an oxidized oil, then it's free radicals throughout your body, damaging tissues, damaging cells, creating insulin resistance.
You know, for Isabella too, because I sent her a thing that talked about cancer. I think it's Gerson. I think it was her that mentioned about it. Because he does the flax oil with the cottage cheese, the organic cottage cheese.
Oh, what's her name?
Gerson?
No, it's not Gerson. It's it starts with a B.
Budwig Selleck.
What is it?
Budwig Selleck.
Bud Whiskey. Yeah, there it is.
Budwig. B-U-D-W-I-G. Yep.
Yeah, I told you, Lynn, the other day, I'm not good at Trivial Pursuit. I can't remember the specific name. I can recite the pathway and how it all works together, but the names of the things, I can't remember people's names.
Well, and there's actually a vegan form that's healthier that uses those same principles.
Ooh. And what is the principle of combining the cottage cheese with the flax oil?
Go ahead.
Supposedly it puts the flax oil, it puts oxygen into the veins. It actually, like, paints it on there. So it brings oxygen and will get to the tumors, which will stop the angiogenesis. Am I saying that right? The forming of blood vessels to the cancer tumors.
Oh, yeah, the angiogenesis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so
names I remember, but not Mary Smith. I can't remember Mary Smith's name, but angiogenesis, no problem.
So yeah, because I remember because I watched this stuff so many times, but and other things that I just thought that would.
But what is the cottage cheese mixed with that? Because it's very specifically
flax oil.
Right, but flax oil mixed with cottage cheese.
Yeah, and you whip it up to where it's really creamy, and then you can top it with fresh fruit.
Yeah, but what's the point of the cottage cheese? Like, you want to know when there's something in there and you're going, cheese, I don't know about cottage cheese. It's, you know, what would I replace it with? You want to know what the mechanism, why they put it in. Is it just to make it creamy? I mean, you can use
maybe she can explain it. I know half of it.
You know half of it? I don't know. I've never got the full answer. I mean, is it just like the old chicken soup recipe? It's, well, that's how mama did it, right? We just do it that way because mama did it that way.
Right. No, the cottage cheese is supposed to provide a fat that people can, it just, like she said, delivers it to the vessels. So Budwig is one and Select is another. So, but people do them together. And the idea is to get rid of cancer cells, you know, make your body, your inner terrain better, eliminate toxins and that type of thing. And so, you know, there's a particular powder called Select powder. And yeah, it's supposed to help with that. You'd put it in this powder in with cottage cheese, and it's supposed to help deliver it because it has that fat and everything like that.
Well, yeah, but that again, right? I'm always like, let's go deeper. What's that fat? What's that mechanism? Why is it that? And are there other things that can deliver it that way? Because
sure, so I recommend like a coconut kefir or something like that, or a coconut yogurt because it can still help break down that flaxseed oil. And
so when you say break down the flaxseed oil, what does that mean? Break it down.
So make it more deliverable into the.
Okay. This is something great. Send me something because this is where I'm teaching you to be discerning, right?
Right.
Opinion versus mechanism. Like, what is the mechanism of that making it going into the cells, right? Does it make it less sticky? Does it break down certain bonds? You know what I'm saying? And then when you understand the mechanism, then you can say what other things can do it. But it could be just a carrier, like it started out to make it more palatable. Nobody liked flax oil. They weren't eating it up. It was really gross. And so they mixed it with cottage cheese to make it go down better, right? That's where I want to like know.
Well, that's part of it. Their theory is that it's supposed to energize cells. So in their thinking, there's some type of electrical piece to it because of the electricity in the cell. So it's like with a battery. I apologize. I'm pretty good at Trivial Pursuit, but I'm trying to remember some of this.
Well, I would like to read some of that and just really look through it because I see that a lot and I just discount it. Like they're eating cottage cheese. People shouldn't eat it. It's acidic forming. The whey is, problematic for insulin resistance. It makes mucus. Who knows what cows they're coming from. They're not specifying that it has to be organically grown from pastured cows. People are going out to the grocery store, buying cottage cheese, buying flax oil, mixing it together, and could be hurting themselves rather than helping themselves, right? That's all I'm getting at. And the powder, what is this powder?
Right. Yeah, I don't have it right in front of me.
Yeah, get me a link or something that you've read that you think was a good article. I'd love to know more. I don't know how we get off on that, but we started out with insulin resistance and fat and
and she was talking about because this particular protocol is often recommended with cancer patients.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And, so she was recommending it to Isabel. Yeah.
And so she was talking about in relation to Isabel.
From metastasizing, stopping those blood cells from forming and spreading. You know, you want to do anything to stop it. And if I get a chance, I'll try to find. She does have a video where she's described it about how finally, after all this testing and before her father, whatever, that they came up with the fat from the cottage cheese and the flaxseed oil, it actually will paint those vessels and stop that in reverse.
Yeah, I'm curious. I just want to know the mechanism.
Because I think there's things that we should, you know, have on hand because it seems like cancer is coming more and more about in our community that knowing things or having an alternative for vegans that you're just going to see more and more cancer coming. Mm-hmm. And biocancer, I just read the other day, sorry, my memory's not good, but from GMOs. Mm-hmm. Number one cause biocancer. So I was like,
yeah, there's a lot of that. That's we're finding more and more what the glyphosate is actually doing to people.
Yeah.
Really crazy.
So getting in those good
And it doesn't get tested before it gets thrown out in the environment, right? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't get tested. So they were like the guinea pigs. Oh, well, sorry. We didn't realize that was going to kill people, but we'll take it off the market now. But it's kind of late if you've been afflicted. And, you know, I think it's kind of gross. I'm real open to alternative, you know, but I want to understand because I know there's a lot, and I said this to Lynn earlier, I get really impatient with the kind of questions that we get sometimes, like, well, Charlotte Gerson said flax seeds are bad for you. And, you know, so-and-so said this is bad for you. And they're like demonizing
right
foods based on their experience with certain types of people or their own experience, but not really sharing any specific methods of how this works. And, you know, I don't think we should be demonizing good food, like the whole lectin thing, like Gundry. I mean, that guy is all over the place. He's got great marketers and he's getting into everybody's case. And everybody's thinking, you're telling me to eat chia seeds. That stuff's bad. Dr. Gundry says so, right? And lectins they're part of every food. It's like a marker on the food that distinguishes them. And yes, some people have gut problems and they can't handle it. And during their healing phase, just like somebody may have to avoid oxalates and histamines or whatever else, polyphenols, whatever, we need to identify what's for that particular person. Cause there's so many people out there that are afraid to eat. Have you noticed that? They're afraid to eat anything because they went on this summit and they said, don't eat oxalates. And this summit said, don't eat histamines. And this summit said, don't eat animal products. And this one said, don't eat fats. And they're going, what's left? What am I going to eat? And a lot of them are down to very few foods and it's making them worse. So I think we need to help people to relax around the food and be open to it and not be scared every time they sit down to eat. Cause that's,
I think you should come up with the it depends diet. Should I eat this food? It depends.
I like that. Maybe I could write a book, the it depends diet.
I like that.
I say it all the time. I might as well
write the book
about it.
Might as well.
Didn't Mark Harmon just come out with what the F to eat or something like that?
Who's doing that? What the F to eat?
Dr. Hyman. Mark Hyman.
Oh, is he?
I thought it was titled that, What the F to Eat.
Oh, that's funny. I tried to do a seminar and nobody came to it. When I was doing a lot of food classes, I'd do this class and this class. And then I said, let's do the one called What's Left to Eat. And that's the thing I was going to address. Like, this is that, and this is that. What do we actually eat? Nobody showed up for it. I didn't get to do it. Nobody signed up. So many people didn't care. Now maybe more so. But I'd really like to do that kind of thing where it's like, keto and paleo and macrobiotic and Gerson and all these different food plans. What's the right one? Well, it depends. It depends on who you are.
It's what the heck should I eat?
What the heck? Okay, not what the F.
I was like, Mark Hyman said that.
Okay. Well, I like it's the same.
But concept. This is an interesting topic because I just came from an Ayurvedic consultation. There's somebody who comes from India like once a year. And so I was really curious about it. And so I was sharing because I've been doing more of the sweet spot type foods. And so she said, well, what did you eat? And I said, well, I don't really eat much until like maybe 11 to 1 or something like that. And then I might have like a big salad or something. And she goes, what else? Well, you know, a big salad. So where's your carbs? What did she say? Where's your carbohydrates? And I said, well,
all the vegetables.
I said I did put some carrots and beets on it. She said, no, I mean your grains and your breads. I said, well, I don't eat bread and grains. Oh, okay. And no cheese? No, not dairy cheese. And then I might have something like a soup or something like that at night. And she said, there can be some truth to this. I should probably eat, more cooked food. Mm-hmm. Because I do occasionally have some digestive issues, mm-hmm. but they do this pulse testing thing,
yeah.
which I find fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
but she said that I probably have leaky gut. Mm. And she did bring up again, cause I'm missing like the back of my teeth, both top and bottom. I did get a partial denture, but it doesn't fit very well. And so I don't chew very well.
Mm.
And, so that's affecting it.
Blended foods.
Yeah. But
then, so it's hard to have raw foods unless you're blending them. And like you can make cauliflower and be able to easily chomp it with very few teeth when it's cooked, but try that when it's raw. And
the whole idea of chewing is really important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't, again, and eating slowly.
Yeah.
You know, that's a novel concept because we always seem to be so busy and putting stuff on our plates and so forth. And so this concept that we're talking about here is with the, Lynn Rose, I learned that when with my macrobiotic studies 30 some years ago, they do more cooked and less raw vegetables as well, but they do have the salad and the pickles and that type of thing as well. But it was, so I just said, you know, point blank, if I didn't come in and say, well, I don't eat this, what kind of a diet would you put me on? And she, you know, more kitchery type foods with the rice and the legumes. They have a spice called hing, which I actually have, and ghee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but is she personalizing that to you, or is that a similar thing that she's going to say to everybody, that everybody needs?
Well, no, because she, you know, she asked me a lot of questions, and...
I understand that, too, but I've seen that happen, where you go into it with the idea, like in Chinese medicine, nobody should eat raw foods. Right, like some of the stuff they're taking from old stuff, like you shouldn't eat raw foods because there's no the sanitation isn't good, and you're going to get a parasite, right?
Right.
Or you know, I see that some people need to eat more cooked versus raw, but I guess what I'm coming to is a lot of those diet plans that they're doing are very like there's a formula, and they may add a couple of extra spices here or there for particular people. But there, if you really look at it, I wonder, is there really that much difference between them? That's my.
Right. But it's also I feel like I'm going through the process one of our clients would probably be going through, which is, and I know more things than many of our clients, although they're pretty darn smart. But it's, so taking what she was taught in her tradition and merging and integrating that with what I know and creating something for me that, that my life can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where we understand, the importance of knowing your lifestyle and having your why. It's your why and your what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do I want to do this, and what am I willing to do for it?
Yeah. And how do you feel when you do it, and how does it bounce off your ethics and morals and and what you know? And I think that's why it's so confusing for people, because they hear one person say one thing and another person say another and another person say another, and they don't have enough of the background to know what's right for them. So they try this for a couple of weeks and they try that, and they get themselves into a lot of trouble. People who have been vegan for a long time are often told when they go to a macrobiotic or an Ayurvedic doctor, nobody can subsist on a plant-based diet.
Well, not macrobiotic, because that is plant-based, but definitely.
But definitely Ayurvedic. But nobody can subsist on that, and therefore you must eat this. And then they get real scared and confused. And then you go to the other extreme, and you go to the plant, 100% plant-based SOS. No salt, no sugar, no oil, right? And some people don't do well on that because they're loading up on beans and grains. and they don't do well on that. And so it's really a matter of just finding that right diet for a person. And like you said, taking into account their lifestyle, their traditions, their taste buds, but also what their body is able to tolerate at a given point in time. So I think it's important to really listen to people and not go in with a bias, right?
Exactly. And, you know, and I'm sharing this just because I think it could be of help to us as practitioners with our clients, mm-hmm. that we take in their whole being, not just their labs or what their diet is that day, their whole being, their whole life, understanding why is this important. And then again, starting with the basics. Are you chewing your food? Mm. How are you eating? Are you, you know, like, sure, I'm eating good food, but I'm eating it while I'm sitting here in front of the computer on a call or something like that. And I'm just
shoveling it in unconsciously.
Yeah, exactly. And so really, really emulating that for ourselves. And I say this for me just as much as anybody, because we tend to overschedule ourselves, and so we don't take even 5 minutes to just be calm and start to eat our meal that way.
Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, that's why it takes me all day to drink my smoothie, because I'll start and then whoops, I have to go to something, and well, I'm not going to drink it while I'm agitated, and so I've still got my smoothie, it's still got like an inch left in it, because I went out at this little break I had, and I went out and sat by the hot tub and put my feet up and drank my smoothie, and then I was like, well, I'm still not finished it because I chew my liquid food.
Right.
And that's the problem. People think, okay, I could probably drink this whole thing down in 15 minutes, no problem, if I just drank it like a liquid. But that's not how I do it. I put it in my mouth. I swish it around. I kind of chomp it and then swallow it. And that's how we need to teach people to do it, because they tend to eat too much, too fast, and overtax their digestive power. So, yeah, it just all goes back to biochemical individuality, and not just biochemical individuality, but individuality, right? Lifestyle, energetics, past traumas, current environment, all of that stuff needs to be taken into account. And we can't just say, I mean, I still do mostly raw foods. And in the summer, I probably do 100% raw foods, and I just gravitate towards that. And I remember having, you know, friends that were 100% really raw foodists. And I was like, they're saying, well, why didn't you tell that person just to eat raw food? I'm like, well, that person has some gut irritation, and I needed them to be on blended cooked foods for a while we heal it. Well, yeah, but raw foods will heal it. That's not been my experience, that, you know, maybe juicing and going away to a retreat. And, but even some people get sick on the juices because it's just too much, right? So we have to just look at it as each one's individual, and we have some biases. We all have biases, right? And then we have to say, well, am I being biased with them, or am I giving them what's right for them? And they're like, really looking, how did that work? Okay, let's shift that around. Let's switch that around. Let's get that going in a different direction. And we all have to step away from our egos and our, like, this is what's right and this is what works for me, so of course it should work for you. And we just have to just sit with it and allow ourselves and our inner wisdom to connect with their inner wisdom. And they're so sick right at this point, and they're so stressed is mostly where it's at, that it's hard for them to tap into their inner wisdom. So being able to sit with them and energetically connect, as well as physically and verbally connect, and feeling into what feels right. And sometimes I don't even know half the time what comes out of my mouth. I'm like, what did I just say? And it didn't go through my thought process. It maybe just came like an intuition I had about what this person should do, because we're being present. And when you're not present, when you're rushing, and when you're feeling annoyed, then you can't connect with them on that level, and we can't really sense what they need the most. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Jane McMahon is on, and she has an oat test. She just gave it to me. She's in Australia, so her time zone is different, but she's also not feeling real great. So if I will download this here real quick and pass it over to her. It's an oat test.
Okay, we can go over it. And it looks like Michelle and Susan have their hands up. So while you're doing that, check in with them and see if they have quick questions or more in depth, and we'll make a decision. So unmute. I'm going to go Susan. Yes. Hi, Susan L. You had your hand up. Whoops. Unmute. I can't unmute you. That's weird. Unmute you. Unmute yourself. No. Looks like you're unmuted, but there's something wrong with your mic. I hear something. So it must be your mic, like something.
Maybe it's okay. There. Is that better?
Yes.
I had a speaker plugged in. I just realized that.
Okay, got it.
Okay. Michelle had her hand up first, so I had a question on just the Keto Mojo and the whole keto thing, and we can do that another time.
Well, let's go do Michelle, and then we'll do the test, and then we'll see if Michelle has a quick one, or if we can go, if she minds, if we go to Jane's test. I can't seem to unmute. My end is not. All right, wait. Unmute. There we go. Michelle.
I had a question about the strategy. Got a 23andMe report for a client.
You're very low, so let me see if I can turn my volume up, or if you can get closer to your speaker.
Okay. Hold on. Let me change something. Just a moment.
Okay. And then Lynn, just tell me when you have her thing uploaded and I'll go look at it.
I put it in your Skype.
Okay. Can you hear me better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay. I said that I did a 23andMe report and I downloaded it into the Strategene.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if you've seen one of those before, but I wasn't sure on how to interpret it, meaning I wasn't sure what it was trying to say. Am I able to share screen to show it to you?
You could. Can we? Do you mind if we do Jane first since she's not feeling well and she...
Okay.
Yeah?
Go ahead.
Okay. We'll go to Jane first. There she is. Hi, Jane. Unmute yourself. There you go.
There you go. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, I've been really unwell, like chronic fatigue's come back, nauseous looking at the screen. So I was kind of desperate to get a little bit of help. I haven't been able to do any study, unfortunately. But yeah, in a bit of a crisis, yeah, health-wise. Yeah.
No.
But anyway, I just got the oats test back, so it's good timing.
And it's your oat test, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So
let me pull it up. I will share my screen and Lynn, oat test. There we go. And why won't it open? There it is. It's opening. All right. I'm going to go ahead and share it. Share screen. Where'd it go? Oat test. It's always hard. They never have them in the order. There it is. All right. Share screen. All right. Can you guys see my screen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So a little bit of background. So you've had chronic fatigue. Do you have digestive stuff? What? Just give me like the short.
Well, 12 years ago, I got a really bad bug and I got chronic fatigue. It took me years to overcome. Thought I'd overcome it. But then 2.5 years ago, I started getting vertigo and the diagnosis was a vestibular migraine. So the brain's doing something wrong and it's been constant. But I mean, it improved last year with tryptophan, but then this year it's got bad again. And then now the last 2 weeks, chronic fatigue's come back, which is causing me huge anxiety and getting to the point where I can't focus or think. I think it's the depression. I don't really know, but I'm just, my brain is not working. It's like on really low function.
Okay.
Yeah.
As well as burning. And then what you've done for it in terms of diet, in terms of lifestyle, your sleep, your stress, all that?
So I've been trying to do all the right things, like, all the – normal, like no gluten, no dairy. I think I eat really, really well. I think, I've had to stop work because of it. But the sleep has been good up until 2 weeks ago when I've had the anxiety, but the sleep started to become a bit broken now because I've got the chronic, I'm just worried, yeah.
Yeah, and have you done any blood sugar testing, any gut repair work, any parasite?
No, I haven't done any of that yet. So I'm just, the first thing is I thought I'd get this test done and see where to go from there.
And then in terms of diet, whole foods.
Vegan, whole foods.
And high grain, high bean, high vegetable. Tell me more.
Probably more vegetables. At the moment, I can't digest much. I'm just really literally having like hummus, fruit and vegetables, coconut yogurt, and maybe nuts and seeds. Maybe a bit of almond and tahini. Not able to digest much at the moment. Very low digestion. Yeah.
So if we look at your fungal markers, you've got two really high fungal markers. So arachnus and tartaric. So that means there's likely yeast or fungal overgrowth in your gut.
Okay.
Yeah. From a bacterial standpoint, the bacterial markers look okay. There's a little bit on the high end of normal, but it's probably okay. You might have some imbalance in your normal flora. Certainly recommend a stool test to follow this up to see what's growing in there. So I would do I don't know what you can get over there, but I like Doctor's Data. That's the comprehensive with the parasitology, because there may be parasite. Oftentimes, when you can't get rid of a yeast overgrowth, there's parasite. And so I would do that, parasitology.
Actually, I should say, I just did a stool test, and they said I've got Shigella. That was the only thing that came up, Shigella, which you said was inconsequential.
So was it do you have a copy of it? You make sure we get a copy of it. Because
I don't have it online, but it just said here that I've got no Giardia, no cryptosporidium, whatever it is. No blastocystis, no entamoeba, no dientamoeba. So none of those parasites, but the bacteria was Shigella, and then there's like no Salmonella, no Campylobacter, no Yersinia, and no Aromanas. I can't say them.
They tested you for a certain set. Did they test your digestive function, though? That's the thing I like about those tests. You get elastase, you get to look at the inflammatory markers, you get to look at the good flora, you get to look at the commensals. Those are the things that I think are really important. Since you had the parasite, then you can skip the parasite part. Right?
Yeah.
Probably don't have a parasite, but, Shigella is a bacteria, but I would say still getting a comprehensive stool analysis to see, because there's definitely some yeast. So it didn't sound like they tested a yeast.
No.
On an anti-candida type, anti-yeast protocol, out of the blue, in the dark without knowing what it is. And you certainly can do that and get good results. But, and maybe you want to do that for a month or two and then redo the oat test and then see if you want to do a stool test. Or if you can do the stool test, then you can usually do, like with Doctor's Data, they'll check to see, like, what are the yeast, what organisms are there. And then they do the sensitivity testing to see what natural therapeutics are actually going to be killing that thing. What is it sensitive to? So a lot of times, go ahead and just do it. If you've never done one before, then chances are good you can just pick a variety of them and rotate through. I would make sure that you're doing like a biofilm approach as well to get, because if you don't break down the biofilms, a lot of times you can't get rid of them. So a very comprehensive approach. It's all in the CMDS program, digestive in that module that's on protocols for that. And you can look that up there. But I would definitely do that or get the stool test. I mean, you could just start that protocol, but it definitely is a yeast issue. It's not showing particular bacterial markers, and maybe the Shigella. I don't know which particular marker a Shigella would produce. So there's some low levels in terms of your, this is Clostridia. Sorry. So there's some low levels of that. I don't think it's such a big deal. So I don't see anything down here as far as Clostridia. I was thinking I was looking at the neurotransmitter, so I wasn't even reading it. Looks like there's low glycolic, but high oxalate. And that often comes with leaky gut, and maybe that you have a genetic tendency towards oxalate sensitivity, but it could be leaky gut.
Okay.
So I would look this one, the citric in the mitochondria, easy enough to do whenever I see anything out of balance in the mitochondrial markers, I'll take a look at the Krebs cycle diagram, which is in module 2. You look at the Krebs cycle diagram and there's pictures of one to the next, to the next, to the next in the Krebs cycle, but what are the cofactors in between? And I don't memorize this stuff, so I wish I did. I wish I could just say, oh yeah, so that's a B6 or magnesium or whatever, but I don't have it memorized. I usually would look up on the chart. So find out if there's something like, why is that high? What comes after it? And then what's stopping it from getting converted? That's usually what I would look at.
So where would I find that one? That would be in the
module 2.
Yeah, module 2.
Yeah.
And I'm going to look up, it's related to the citric, my brain's not
the Krebs cycle. Module 2 is about the Krebs cycle. Yeah. It's energy metabolism. And there's a set of slides. You probably just find it right there in the slide. You can also probably go to Google and look up Krebs cycle images and then find one that has the cofactors in between.
Oh, the cofactors, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, some of them are real basic diagrams and just shows the majors, but the others, the one that we have in there, it's really nice because it shows you the different cofactors that take it around.
Okay.
Okay. Neurotransmitters. You said there's some depression, any anxiety, depression and anxiety, you're saying, right?
Yeah, mainly secondary to my health, you know, like I'm feeling so... Because
there is a little bit of neurotransmitter imbalance here. You're high on the homovanillin HVA, which is related to dopamine. This one actually has a chart, so you can go back down to Z's picture. Okay, so HVA was high for you, which means that that's probably related to your low energy. The dopamine's getting converted to HVA instead of across to norepinephrine, epinephrine to give you a little bit of oomph and some adrenal support. Look at this again. And this doesn't list the cofactor, but my guess is it could be a B6 issue. We'd want to find out what the cofactor is for this dopamine beta hydroxylase. So if you do a web search, say dopamine beta hydroxylase cofactor.
Okay.
Then, and it could also be a genetic thing, like a COMT or one of the genetic SNPs that you have a tendency towards that.
Okay.
And again, I'm trying to go through this quickly without having a lot of background on you. This would be good for a study, but in terms of before you got sick, before you got the fatigue in the first place, you know, what was going on? Where are the leading factors that led? Travel, new home, toxic metal exposure, any of those things?
Yeah, I seem to actually. Does it come saying here? I think I've got heavy metals coming up somewhere. Yeah,
I would say, you know, on this, if you want to get a little bit of support, maybe some tyrosine could be helpful. With B6.
And how much tyrosine? Wait, I don't know what tyrosine.
Tyrosine's amino acid. I would probably do 500 milligrams, start with once a day and then go twice a day. Usually I do tyrosine morning and mid afternoon.
Okay.
And 500 each time and just see how you feel, but start your small. So I would say, you know, start with just the one dose. Start with the mid-afternoon dose and see how you feel. Or if you tend to be more tired and more down in the morning, then go there. So whichever time you seem to have that more of an issue.
So that might be more of a pick-me-up, the tyrosine, is it?
A pick-me-up so much as, I mean, it's a mood. It would certainly elevate your mood and give you...
Okay.
When you have a deficiency of dopamine, you tend to lose pleasure. Like, nothing's pleasurable anymore. It's just like, no motivation. Just like, right? Let's see. Ketones are no problem. Urethrothiamine. Do you take B vitamins? I think that's probably why your B5 is.
Yeah, I'd just taken some B5s about a month before the test. That's why. But I do take a daily B vitamin mix.
It's supportive of your adrenals and all. Ascorbic acid is low. I mean, and it's got a six-hour shelf life, basically. So you really could be taking vitamin C every 6 hours. If this was first, well, this is 24 hours. So this is across the 24-hour day saying you don't have enough.
Okay.
So I would increase your vitamin C. You're low in glutathione precursor like NAC. That could be helpful.
And you just take glutathione.
I would say NAC, N-acetylcysteine.
Can you take it? Can you NAC? Okay.
Yeah. NAC is a very, you know, it's used a lot in detox programs and leaky gut repair programs. And if you have some gut issues, it could be helpful in supporting that.
Okay. Yeah.
Aspartame, salicylates, or GI bacteria. So there's a bacterial marker. Let me just look at that one and remind myself of that one. That was 61, right? Yeah. Amino acids, I don't see anything. Yeah, so let's look up 61. Now, I know you probably don't drink anything with aspartame in it.
No. Yeah.
Salicylates. So salicylates can be aspirin, but there's also salicylate foods. So possible that you're eating high salicylate foods. We have listed that in module, I think 10 or 11 in the food thing, but just look up salicylates, salicylate foods, high salicylate foods, and see if you're doing any of those. That would account for it.
Okay.
Yeah. And so taking like willow bark, white willow bark. Okay, because that's like aspirin would contain acetylsalicylic acid, but also white willow bark would have that. So if you're taking any herbals for pain relief, you would see that. So I would just look to see if there's some stuff that you're eating that would contribute to that, and then that's why that marker would be high.
Okay.
Sometimes people have just had something, but it doesn't sound like it. Wait a minute. If your gut bacteria are converting tyrosine or phenylalanine to salicylic acid, this would be high. And guess what? The market for that tyrosine would be low. Like a picture. Yeah.
Right.
So you wouldn't be going down here and your HVA would be low because the tyrosine, see tyrosine, phenylalanine?
Yeah.
And it gets converted to DOPA and down to HVA, dopamine and HVA. So it could go back to the gut bacteria. So if you found you had Shigella, Shigella, that could be the cause of that being elevated, that you're converting your dopamine, basically your dopamine precursor, your tyrosine, into salicylic acid, which could cause you to feel kind of crummy anyway. I mean, people don't feel good when they have high salicylates.
Okay.
So I really think you'd do well to get a stool test to see what's going on functionally in your stool, to see what your good bacteria are versus none, and then really get in there and be able to balance it. If in lieu of that, like to give you some relief now, I would say try taking a little bit more tyrosine, but if you find yourself feeling more loopy, more fatigued, more depressed, then stop it because it's just getting converted to more of salicylic acid and you wouldn't want to do that. So you might be able to bypass, get a higher threshold and get more of it to convert to dopamine and feel better. But if you don't, if you feel worse, then stop it. Don't stay on it.
Okay.
I would also say something, you know, a candida protocol, whether you go into our, you know, the digestive CMDS module on that, and, you know, just put something into place. You know, there's a number of things, but I'm always a fan and we go through it in detail. So we don't have time to spend an hour on it here, but I like to rotate and I like to do biofilms before getting into doing that. Or like for a week before, do biofilm disruptors, serrapeptidase and things like that, and then go into an anti-candida protocol. Does that make sense?
I don't actually know what a biofilm is. I can find out what that is. A biofilm is that a different
biofilm? Is like, you know, when you look at a pond and there's slime on the top of it, that's a biofilm. Yeah. When you pick up a piece of fruit and it's got this white coating on it, that's a biofilm. And it's a biofilm is produced to protect the organism. So these organisms that live that are kind of dysbiotic in our gut will surround themselves by this protective layer so that we can't attack it. And so you might be putting in all these great antifungal foods and doing really well, but they're like living in their little colony, in their bubble, so to speak. We need to break that down.
And so there's a protocol for that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's all described in the digestion module.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it's open to you, but Lynn can certainly open it up to you. and get it. Usually it goes in order, so you probably didn't get there yet.
I've been too sick to study. I haven't been I normally can only do about 5 minutes on the computer. It's been really rough. Yeah, so anyway, that's why I haven't been going forward with the study, unfortunately.
Well, you'll get there. So let's get this under control. You got to get that under control. And it could make a huge difference. You might have a slight setback. You might have to slow down, go slowly. Yeah. I would usually do like a serapeptidase or other biofilm disruptor, 7 to 10 days. Pretty intense, but again, you're small and you're sensitive, so go slowly and go easily with it. And then switch and keep doing that. And then start on some of the anti-candida, antifungal type of things. I mean, you could do simple stuff like, you know, oregano and garlic and things like that, Powdiarco, but then you can do more intensive type things, biocin.
Okay. So that's the plan then. So I'll try the tyrosine, do the biofilm approach, the candida approach, a bit of vitamin C.
Right. And then, you know, good probiotics. Do you get bloaty? Do you have symptoms in your gut?
No, I don't. But my intuition is that my gut is actually, I was going really well last year and then I did a water fast last December and I have gone really downhill after the fast. Mm. So I think I didn't set up the gut properly afterwards. I think that's where I've gone wrong. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you want to look at some probiotic containing foods, make your own. You said you do yogurt, add some extra bifidus to that because most of the time people are low in the bifidus. But again, we won't know. When you do a stool test, you'll know for sure which ones. Right?
Yeah.
But bifidus is a safe bet because I would say that 90% of all stool tests I look at, people are low in bifidus.
And can you just buy it on its own, bifidus?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds, and did you say to take NAC as well?
I would. I think it would be helpful. Again, if you start to get any kind of weird detox kind of symptoms, because it can create, you know, a good detoxification. If it's too fast, then slow it down. But you've done water fasting and you've done other kinds of things. So I think you'll probably be able to handle it.
Yeah. I'm very like unwell at the moment. I can't handle anything too severe.
Go slowly with whatever you do. Slow. Just add one thing at a time. Don't add like, okay, now I got my biofilm and candida and AC and tyrosine all at the same time. And then you go, oh, that hit me like a ton of bricks. So use your intuition to determine which ones feel like the good place to start. And if you're into using intuition and muscle testing, go over to the health food store and just start testing your sway testing with the nobody looking and seeing if
idea. Awesome.
Testing, whatever you might do. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I just one other thing, it's been a constant migraine. The doctor said to go on an SSRI, which I was trying to avoid, but I've had to go back on it because I'm just not coping at all. And I've just started that again, but that won't interfere with any of this, will it? I just want to go back on it for the short term to give me some relief.
I'm looking here. Probably is fine. Your serotonin markers are on the low side. Just watch it. If you add the tyrosine, just watch that you don't get overly lethargic from it. Like, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. You know, everything's fine. I just am going to go to bed. Right. So you just want to make sure that you don't overdo it. I don't see that. If you had high serotonin markers, I probably would be concerned.
But you think it would be okay still to do the tyrosine? I'll give it a go anyway.
Do that one last.
Okay.
Okay, do the others and see how you feel. And if you notice it'll be better, then you can wait on it.
Yeah.
Anything else that you're on that I should know about before? Because, again, like quick advice without a full history, and I just don't.
I'm just taking magnesium and zinc and, the fatty
B vitamins. You're taking B vitamins?
Oh, B vitamins. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking to see if anybody else had anything to say. Anybody in the chat? Let's see. DE, like diatomaceous earth, to pull stuff out. That's not a bad idea.
I've got some of that. Would you do that just first thing in the morning or at night?
I would away from food.
Yeah.
So first thing in the morning, last thing at night. Yeah. Go slowly with it. It can be irritating to some folks, but it can definitely draw things out, especially if there's bugs. Let's see. Diluting grapeseed or other carrier oil. What was that for? Oh, tea tree. Somebody's talking about something else. Let's see. Susan put an NAC product up there if you want to look in the chat.
Okay.
How much do these tests? You mean the oat test, Tony? If you're talking the oat test, it's like around 300. And some insurance companies cover them. Yeah. Drina said there's a NAC spray on Amazon from Honeycomb Industries. I always like things best in a liquid, a spray, or a powder because you can completely control your dosage. And Lynn put a link. So go in there. Lynn said maybe some DAE. Susan says, I hope you're feeling better soon, Jane. Tony said, you got this, Jane. Check in and let us know how you're doing.
thank you.
Lynn Rose said she uses 1 to 2 tablespoons of the DE. That's usually what I do.
What's DE? Oh, that's dimensions. Okay.
Earth. Yeah. And charcoal is a possibility to just pull things out as you release them. Especially when you're trying to kill, when you're starting to kill off bugs, it's good to have something that can pull, because they're going to produce toxins. That's the thing. So the die-off reaction, the Herxheimer reaction will start to happen. And because you'll release the endotoxins that they're carrying in their cell walls. If that happens, you know you're doing the right thing, but you may have to slow down.
Right? Okay.
And I'm a real fan of not doing the same protocol. Like, here's a 30-day candida protocol. Like, if you've got a lot of stuff going on, I would do like a rotation of 5 days on of one, 5 days of another, 5 days of another, and then go back and do another one. That way you don't get the bugs don't get used to what you're trying to kill them with and create new defenses, right?
Okay. So 5 days candida, then 5 days break is what you mean, and then 5 days again.
Oh. Well, no, you can actually pick three or four different herbs that you're going to use.
Oh, I see herbs, yeah.
Use one for 5 days, another for 5 days, another for 5 days. But start I'm using my timeline here on my desk, so forgive me for looking weird. But I would say 7 to 10 days on the serrapeptidase or other kinds of biofilm disruptors. At about 7 days, you can start the candida piece, but continue. Like, you really do a higher dose of the biofilms in the first couple of weeks. So like really high intense dose, and then you lower it down, but you continue it while you're killing off the candida. It's like you want to get a head start, like get their defenses down and then wham. Right? Because if you just start to do the anti-candida stuff and they're all like nestled in their biofilm, it's a waste. So you want to start breaking that biofilm down so you can penetrate in, and then you continue to break it down because they'll continue to try to create a new one, and you continue the serrapeptidase. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So
I hope that's helpful. Anybody else? Dina Brown, with the NAC spray, start with one spray and increase until you have flu symptoms. Okay. That's a great way to do it. Yay. I like that. So you just keep going, and if you start to have flu-like symptoms, you back it off. And that might be one spray for you. Maybe it's two sprays, but then you keep trying. And that way you're allowing your body to get used to this detoxification without overtaxing it.
Okay.
That might be what happened with you with the fast, that things started to die off so quickly that you didn't have anything to back it up with.
Yeah. It seemed to get progressively worse after the fast. Don't know. Yeah. Must have been too much for me, I think.
Might have been too much.
Yeah. So, sorry, I'm not actually sure what the NAC is. So it's is that a bug?
N-acetylcysteine. It's a sulfur-containing amino acid compound. It's a precursor to glutathione.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you could do a liposomal glutathione as well. That's the other way. I'm usually, either way. I mean, it's just, if I don't see somebody's genetics, it's hard for me to know which way to recommend. Yeah. You can try both. They're, you know, both are easy stuff. And you can alternate. That's another thing. You know, alternating so your body doesn't get used to a certain way is a good thing.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I'll be able to find a recording of this call, will I?
It will be on the website under calls and recordings. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Okay.
Great.
Thank you so much for your help.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So I'm going to close my share screen. Stop share. And Michelle has, do you have it? Can you share it, Michelle? You have the report, the strategy?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and share it.
Share your screen. Good. Great. Thank you, Jane.
Are you able to see it?
Yep.
Okay. So it goes through, of course, with the various SNPs
Right. And the big ones are the, well, one little MTHFR and the SOD. I don't know. I'm not familiar with GSTP.
That's a glutathione S-transferase.
Okay.
That's a glutathione. It's like one of the manufacturing hormones, I mean enzymes for it. You've got some, there's some right here, BCO1 is the vitamin A conversion from beta carotene to vitamin A.
Okay.
So that would mean that, you know, yeah, either do tons and tons of beta carotene or adapt it with, you know, periodic vitamin A.
So how would that relate to, say, the consumption of carrots? Would that be not sufficient?
Well, here's the thing. You know, if you find, I find that people with BCMO1 will get more orange when they start to eat carrots and other high beta carotene foods, because all your veggies are all your greens and all are high, bell peppers, et cetera. And it's because the beta carotene isn't being converted to vitamin A. If you're eating tons of it, right, tons and tons of it, then you're fine because you can actually, it's like, okay, if you're eating, you know, 14 times what you need and you only convert 20%, then that's still okay. But I always tell people when they have homozygous BCO1s to always supplement vitamin A, and it doesn't necessarily have to be every day. I'll usually recommend with the homozygous, like 5,000 a day for a month. And then you just kind of play it by ear, as long as you're eating lots of greens and lots of carrots and lots of bell peppers and, you know, beta carotene containing food.
Okay. So let me see if I understand. If I go back to, say, the one with the glutathione.
Yep.
When you have this and the SOD, when you have this particular homozygous SNP, quote unquote, does that mean that this is your difficulty area, and so now you have to compensate for that?
Yeah, so very low toxicity diet, so you don't need so much, and or, you know, supporting that pathway. With homozygous, I don't usually tell people to supplement when there's a heterozygous, unless they're really severely, like, depleted. If I'm looking at somebody like, oh, I'm depleted, I'm feeling awful, then I probably would do that temporarily. SOD can be found in cream form. OxyCell from Apex has both. Glutathione, has both of them. So that could actually be a really good support system for here.
So then this is the type of person that would need to do this on a long-term basis as a kind of maintenance protocol?
Yeah, and it also depends on their toxicity level, right? If this is a person who's pristine in their diet and lifestyle, then they probably periodically would benefit, especially under higher stress situations, by supplementing. If this is somebody who's on a standard American crapola diet, then they should be supplementing it every day for the rest of their life.
Well, this person has a good diet, but has detoxification issues, always has liver detoxification issues and hormonal issues
for sure. Yeah, I would support it. I would, and I think right there, because of the both of those, I think OxyCell would be a good approach.
Okay. And
COMTs are related to dopamine, breakdown of dopamine and serotonin and all the monoamine oxidants. Monoamines plus estrogen. So that was passed.
Where was that one? The COMTs, you said?
The COMTs, okay. Yeah. It's estrogen metabolism.
The heterozygous. Yeah. Okay. Oh, so that's where the estrogens come in.
Yep. That's catecholaminomethyltransferase. And they'll have difficulty with breaking down the 4-hydroxyestrogens, which are the more dangerous ones.
Yeah, because there's also a history of breast cancer in this
case. Yep. And if you combine that with like a CYP1B1, 1A2, 1B1, S2, those will be further down. I don't know if he does them on here, but those usually are further down.
No, he doesn't do it on here.
You can do just those through Genetic Genie. Just run the raw data through Genetic Genie on the detox.
Okay. Does he use the raw genie though? With
the raw data here. You had to upload your raw data from 23andMe, right? You
did. Yes.
You had to upload your raw data, and you can upload that same raw data to lots of different places.
Okay. So, what's the name of that particular site?
Genetic Genie.org.
Raw genie.
Genetic, Jeannie. Oh, whoa, genetic. It's already almost 7 o'clock. I have another call at 7. Let's go through some other questions. FUT2 is really important for bifidus. I would say watching their probiotics and getting some extra bifidus or probiotic containing foods like making yogurt and adding extra bifidus to it.
Okay. And then the
DMT is FAD. Phospholipids. APOE.
And the APOE.
I think that's an APOE 3-3-2-2. I think it's a 3-3. I have to look at the interpretation, but I think it's a 3-3.
Let me scroll down for there. Let me
scroll down because I think that's a 3-3, but it has it at the very end when it'll tell you the APOE status. Keep going. And he has some really good descriptions in here. There we go.
APOE 3.
Yeah, 3-3. Okay, got it. Yeah, so it's a 3-3. So a little bit of carefulness with saturated fats. Not as bad as a 4-4. Not as clean, not as easy to digest as a 2-2.
Yeah, this person has difficulty digesting fats, period.
There you go. So that could be part of it. So supporting them with enzymes, with liver support, cholagogues, bile.
What type of cholagogues? The bitters?
Well, bitters are a good cholagogue, but there's other cholagogues. What's the name of that one? It's in the liver thing, and I don't remember off the top of my head. Celandine is one. There's a number of them if you go into the CMDS and you go into the liver part.
Okay.
There's a whole list of cholagogues, liver cholagogues.
Okay. So yeah. not necessarily things like going to the extreme of bile salts, but more.
I try not to do the extreme of bile salts unless the person actually has no gallbladder or they have stones or, you know, more of that. But you might at some point, lipase would be good and cholagogues.
Yeah, I'm trying lipase with the person right now and seeing how that goes because the person always has like oil in the toilet bowl.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, do the lipase, do the bitters, do some cholagogues, mm-hmm. But if that doesn't work, you may have to try some bile salts. I've got to go. Okay. I've got another call. I have another call right now. But yeah, go read through it and then just go to the nutrigenomics module. There's tons of support there.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye. All right, guys, I'm going to go. Thank you all for being here. Great to see you. Bye.
Bye.